TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand. It's Raised by Wolves.
Yes, indeed. It's another edition of Raised by Wolves. Welcome in. Thanks for listening. Manny Hill and Dane Moore here with you in the TCL broadcast studios. And Dane, at first, you know, I thought this morning, we'll open the show just talking about last night's game with the Rockets because it was, you know, a pretty competitive game and the Wolves, you know, led the game for most of the way and then things sort of fell apart at the end of the third quarter and then they were sort of scratching and clawing to keep themselves in the game in the fourth quarter and the Rockets, of course, went on to win. But, and we'll get to that, I think, eventually here on the show this week, but I think the first thing we got to get into is this new thing that is going around sports now with the COVID-19 going on and all the major sports leagues have basically combined together to collaborate on essentially reducing the, I don't want to say reducing access, but just changing the way that media can speak to players and coaches. And obviously, you are someone who covers the Minnesota Timberwolves on a regular basis. You are at every home game. You are on the road sometimes watching this team. And so you get a chance to talk with Ryan Saunders and players and post-game interviews and things like that. And now that is going to be changing, at least temporarily. I mean, we'll see how things sort of play out over the next few weeks as this thing goes on. But I just wanted to get your perspective on this as somebody who this whole thing is going to significantly affect.
Yeah, I mean it's meaningful, and I think I have some perspective on this in that I've covered the team 3 years in a credentialed capacity where, yeah, as you said, I'm at all the practices, at all the home games. I travel on the road with the team often, and in that, I've learned what the value of media access is.
Yeah,
and that is not the time that we have our microphones in front of the players after the game for a little 3-minute bit. It's the value of it is I've gotten to know every one of these players, you know, in some capacity where we recognize each other, know each other by name, and you develop a chemistry in ways that there's a common, you know, understanding that our jobs intertwine. They just inherently do, and it's important. It's critical for us to have them, and in ways we're critical for telling, you know, those players' stories.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize how valuable getting to know these players was when I was just, before this, I just was working at a blog. I wasn't credentialed. I thought you could cover a team pretty comprehensively from watching them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I knew there was something missing there, but I was like, oh, whatever. I'll just get the quotes from Fox Sports North or SoundCloud or whatever. Like, yeah. And I can plug them in and link them if I need to. But by having a relationship with a player off the record, you can get to know them and understand, you know, what is going on, and it helps inform the questions you are going to ask that are on the record, that are in front of a camera, that get printed in the newspaper, and that means something. If we just cut that out, the way that fans will get to know players will be so much more limited. It'll be so much more canned, and that's part of the game, I think, particularly in basketball. In a sport where we're watching these players without a face mask and trying to understand the personality, I mean that's what's interesting as a fan, and I think you'll lose that if you reduce contact between media and players, because I can just think of a handful of stories I've written over the years that I would have never have thought to even ask the question or pursue something if I hadn't just been sitting in the locker room before a game with so-and-so and, you know, just been kind of shooting the breeze.
Yeah.
And I that just, like, that matters. If everything is just what you see on Fox Sports North or on the on national TV. Like, it's just going to be so much more limited. Additionally, the value of our jobs and the reason our companies pay us money to do this is because we have unique access. We've earned unique access mm-hmm. with the teams. So if we don't have that access, it's harder for media companies to justify paying journalists. And, you know, this is already an extremely difficult industry, competitive and Absolutely. Very hard to earn money in. So you cut back any of that and, you know, kind of in the aggregate, as it all drips down, you lose value. And if we simulate this out for 5 years, it will work out where there will be less journalists covering basketball teams.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm younger in this, you know, particularly for someone like me who isn't, like, quote unquote established, the notion of that's kind of scary. I like my job. I want to do this. I want to be an established journalist.
For sure.
And so all that said, I get it. Like, this virus is real.
It's a serious deal.
I'm not up in arms, you know, at the moment that I can't, you know, that there's a pause in the access. My concern is that we will not return to the access we once had. Yeah. Because I think that is selfishly bad for me. I think that's bad for fans. And teams might not realize this, but I think it would prove to be bad for the team. Because I think the media is critical in generating interest in a team, particularly a bad team like the Timberwolves have mm-hmm. historically been. If you don't have people writing stories, doing all this stuff, talking about the details of a bad team, it becomes even less interesting to watch.
Yeah.
So, I mean, just historically in the past, as in all sports, as when media is ever restricted, it's very rare that comes back. Like, oh, we tested this out and we're only going to have access at this time and we're going to get rid of this time and we think that'll be plenty. That pre-game access or that post-game access or that shooter on, it doesn't come back.
Right.
And, you know, that's what I'm nervous about, is that we're going to lose that. And I don't know how big of a piece it is, but I think you lose part of the game. You think you lose part of what makes this NBA product so attractive right now. You know, my ability to post-game take a video of James Johnson looking like a goofball in the locker room.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can't do that, then I can't post that on Twitter. I can't post that on YouTube, and then you can't see it.
Right.
Or even if it's just a quote, you know, something like that. If I don't have that, if James Johnson has to come out to a podium outside the locker room where I'm standing 14 and a half feet away from him,
with
it's
seven
not the
other
same.
People standing
it's
there
just
too.
Not, it's yeah. just that that's so much of it will change. And I don't know, this is developing. I think, you know, the Timberwolves specifically, Timberwolves PR and the organization, my assumption, they work really well with us. They'll recognize those sort of things and we can have a discourse. But, you know, if the league lays down some mandates, it's going to be problematic for me and I think for fans.
Yeah. And speaking from my perspective as somebody that doesn't cover the team and I'm not at every game. I'd only been at two games this year, just watching in the stands as a fan. And, you know, as somebody that is primarily an observer of this team on television and sort of through my job and what I do here at Score North as a producer and podcast host and everything, you know, I kind of, you know, in doing this podcast with you and doing it with Danny before he left us, I mean, this was sort of, you guys are like, you know, you guys, you Johnny K, Britt Robson, the guys that are around this team often, you guys are like that, you guys are sort of that communication device that I'm able to use in terms of mm-hmm. being able to connect with the team and being able to be interested in the team and even little things that, you know, you and I may not talk about on the air on this podcast that we might talk about off the air. That stuff for me, just personally, that stuff is valuable. And the
it
fact
influences
that,
your opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. And the fact
perspective,
that,
maybe not opinion, perspective. It
yeah.
It cuts your perspective down for me to have less perspective.
Yeah, 100%. And it is, you know, to your point, it is really scary. It's, I mean, obviously we're really early in all of this, and we don't know how this whole thing is going to play out. But, you know, I was just talking with Patrick Royce yesterday about this, about the biggest concern, like you said, is are we ever going to get back to the way things were once, you know, once the COVID-19 thing is sorted out? Knock on wood. Yeah, let's hope for that. But, you know, if that whole thing gets sorted out, you know, are we ever going to get back to it? And how do we? And I don't know. It just doesn't. It's scary, but it's also going to be really interesting to see how just this entire thing plays out. I'm nervous for you. I mean, we work together on this podcast, but I also consider you a friend as well. So it's like I'm nervous for what this is going to mean for guys like you and guys like Johnny and Britt and who do such a great job covering this team in particular. Like you said, this is a team that is, on paper, not having a very good season. They're 19-45.
Yep.
The tough thing is you got to find other ways for this team to be interesting. They're not going to make the playoffs. They're not going to go on a deep playoff run.
So for me, I think a specific example is, and I've talked with John and Britt and Jace, who covers the team for the Pioneer Press, and Chris Hine, who covers the team for the Star Tribune, and, you know, just kind of had this conversation where once your team kind of falls to a certain point in terms of losses, what we're writing, it kind of changes because, you know, you're still trying to drum up interest and wanting your readers to read your stuff.
Yeah.
Game stories is not going to be as interesting when it's fairly irrelevant. So, you know, the conversation we had is just like, you know, at this point, you kind of need to dig into player specific articles. And I think about, you know, just in this week already, John Krasinski wrote a feature on Naz Reid. Britt Robson wrote a feature on Josh Okogie. I wrote a feature on D'Angelo Russell. In every one of those stories, a critical element of it is the fact that John Krasinski not only got to talk to Naz Reid, but talk to a handful of players about Naz Reid and what he's been in this time. Britt Robson uses he not only used information from players currently on this team, he referenced back interviews he had with Anthony Tolliver and Taj Gibson during Josh Okogie's rookie season to inform the article. D'Angelo Russell, talked to Ryan Saunders about what he's meant for this team, James Johnson, all these different guys. And I write that story different if I don't have that. Mm-hmm. Then it's just me. And, you know, to some degree, like, who am I? Right? Like, It's going to be better if you have the input of the head coach, of their teammates in that. And so, I mean, it's going to water it down. It's going to water it down. And there's a lot of ways the NBA is really good. They're very open with, you know, their video, their highlights and all this and that. And I love writing me a basketball X's nose article, but that's only, you know, that's only part of it.
Right.
Like that's only part
there's
of the,
so much more.
There's so much more to it. And to have that, you need access. And the unique access that you get in a locker room that is involuntarily open is just unique. And sure, it's like kind of weird. Like, yeah, we're there when they're changing and stuff like that. And it's not perfect. I'm not saying it's perfect. And maybe there's like tweaks to be made in different sort of ways along there. But the information I've gathered in those settings with my microphone recorder put away is massive. The Jimmy Butler situation, how much I gathered off the record in that, informed everything I wrote, everything I talked about, and thus informed the entire narrative, you know, at least my part of it, of what was going on with Jimmy Butler. Like this, I don't know. Of course, you and I are biased here to some degree.
Sure.
But I swear, objectively, I think it matters. And 100%. And if it doesn't change a year from now, you'll feel it. Fans, everyone, the team, me, like, you'll feel it.
So what for you... Let me ask you this then. So now I guess, and maybe you're not even sure, but like what is next now for you? Like how, for you specifically, what changes for you in terms of how you can approach this the rest of the way? I mean, this team still has what, 18 games left to play. I mean, you still have to do your job and everything. So how does this, what do you do now?
The next five are on the road, which carries until they're not back here until March 22nd. So, I mean, this the severity of the virus is evolving, you know, by the day.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know what that's going to 11 days from now, what it's going to look like. I'm hoping that, you know, maybe we have some resolution by then.
Right.
Or at least the league and the public relations staff has had some time to talk about what, like, you know, the best way to going about this is, because the teams do understand that media access is valuable. They have massive budgets for public relations staffs and for, traveling and a whole bunch of stuff. So they see the value in it. They're gonna take it seriously. But yeah, like, it's right now, I have some stuff banked from the three game homestand on the players. But like, that becomes more and more relevant by the day. Like, what Malik Beasley said on Saturday. If I'm trying to write a Malik Beasley story the following, you know, 9 days later on Monday, like, how interested are you in reading that? Like, what Malik Beasley had to say after the Chicago game? You know, it's so, that's the nature of journalism, is you've got to kind of have the most recent stuff. And we'll have, you know, we'll have something when they're back here on March 22nd. We'll be able to talk to the players. It'll be different.
Yeah.
There'll be quotes. I just don't think they'll be as meaningful. It'll be more watered down. So, I don't know, for me, or just kind of in like this point of the season where you feel like you've been swimming for like months, and you're just kind of like, when's the next game? And you just kind of go with it, and you do, you know, the task at hand each day. But when I do sit back and look at it, I'm concerned that I'm concerned about what my coverage is going to be like for the final 18 games of the season. And then, you know, as the season ends and, you know, just professionally, you contract and year-to-year contract, you go, well, how is your employer going to, you know, consider this? I mean, not just for me, but for everybody of, like, what is the value of, you know, what is the value of having a beat writer? You know, like me, I've gone to like 10, 12 games this year on the road. If you're my company next year... How are they gonna justify sending me on the road to 10, 12 games next season if I have a third of the access I once had, you know? It'll change everything. So, you know, you just kind of have hope. You have to have faith that, you know, we're going to be able to strike a new balance, but I'm concerned.
I mean, the other part of this too is, you know, the league is considering playing games without fans in attendance. And on the surface, one might look at that and say, okay, well, that would just be weird to see teams playing games in empty arenas and that whole thing. But the part with that is you also have to consider workers at the arena.
There's so many other things that are being affected. We're only talking about, you know, the media element of it. I know this is not the most important thing. I mean, the most important thing is the death rate of this virus and how it's spreading. But because of that, it impacts the media. It impacts workers. And the most important thing it impacts is fans.
Yeah.
There's not going to be fans at the Warriors and Nets game on Thursday.
Yeah.
Like,
unbelievable.
That's critical for the fan experience. And we could bend it over to a whole nother layer of revenue is critical for this league. It directly connects to the salary cap and how much teams can spend. I mean, we learned with the Daryl Morey tweet in China how the salary cap literally has lowered because all of the Chinese sponsors backed out. Like, this is an entire spider web of problems that does nothing good for the NBA.
Yeah, scary stuff. And we'll see how things sort of play out over the next couple of weeks. Let's talk about some basketball, though.
There will still be basketball.
Yes, they will still play games. The Wolves still have 18 games left to play. They played last night against the Houston Rockets. And really, for two and three quarters, they looked pretty good. I mean, they hung with the Rockets. They had one point led by double digits. And then things just sort of unraveled there in the last couple of minutes of the third quarter, and then the Rockets were able to hang on in the fourth. But it the thing that I'm trying to figure out with this team, and I think we've kind of touched on it already in the last couple of weeks, is how is it that they are playing, that they seem to play better on the road than they do at Target Center? I just don't. It's mind-boggling to me.
It actually makes a ton of sense to me.
Okay.
It's, I mean, these players, the majority of them, do not have a connection to Minnesota yet.
Sure.
Or to the fan base. Like, functionally, if you're like D'Angelo Russell or James Johnson, like, playing a game at Target Center is kind of like a road game. You know, you're living in a hotel, or like, sure, D'Angelo's living at Carl's house. Like, it's not like there's not the whole home cooking element of it there. Plus, like, you're playing for the fans, but like, you know what I'm saying? There's not like this, we got to do it, you know, for our home crowd, you know, whole sort of thing. Like, they're just in the midst of a chaotic schedule of games every other day, and pretty much every one of them, you know, feels like a road game.
Yeah.
And I think I remember talking to Robert Covington about this last season, off the record, by the way, just in the locker room.
Yeah.
When
funny how that works.
Yeah, I mean, you remember how he like started off really, really strong, right? Like his first 10 games or whatever. And then he kind of just like, he dipped off, and part of it was the injury, but, you know, just talking to him, and he's like, his life, it was so chaotic. He's like, I just came, I left all my stuff in Philadelphia, and I was just going. And then, you know, once I tried, you know, trying to get his family here, his girlfriend, his pets, yeah, buying a house, he's like, when I was at home, like Minneapolis, I had so much stuff to do, like outside of practice and all that, of, you know, he's under, turns out he got traded, but he was like, I'm under contract for 3 more years. I'm trying to like set down some roots in Minnesota. Like,
right.
And I remember him just being like, it's hard. It's like hard to be at home.
Yeah.
And when you're on the road, like, I don't know if fans like know this, like players have a ton of free time where it's particularly now that like shoot arounds, they don't have those as much.
Mm-hmm.
There's just like a lot of your time with the team is like sort of like rehab, massage, all that sort of stuff, like get your body right. But you're kind of just like chilling at your hotel room.
Because you can't worry about the home stuff because you're not at home.
Exactly. Sure. Like, I mean, yeah, maybe you're doing phone calls or whatever, but like, it's just, it's easier, you know? And your focus is just kind of basketball at, you know, or, and you're getting together, watching film, whatever. There's just like less distractions.
Mm.
And I think, you know, I think that that has a positive impact on this group. Now, they're working against the other teams who do have home cooking, and they're all kind of set in their ways at home. So I don't know, yeah, if it's not like an advantage to be playing on the road, but it makes sense to me that they're not like way better or worse at one place or the other, because when you completely turn your roster inside out, it's every game's a road game for every player who's new.
Yeah.
And who are the holdovers, like Karl-Anthony Towns is one of those. He's not playing.
Right, yeah.
Like, it's, yeah, I don't know. It just doesn't totally surprise me. And I've kind of, like, gotten that vibe from some of the guys, too, where Russell was talking about it the other day. He's like, yeah, we know what we have to do here. And he's like, it's just kind of us against the world when we're playing at Houston or playing at Miami or whatever, like, It's like simpler to them was what he was kind of getting at. So I don't know if that'll change for the rest of the season necessarily. Like, I'm going to need some time.
Yeah, it's so fascinating. It's interesting. Now, for the game itself, I mean, I think we did see some good things. And you know, it was I thought it was interesting to watch them go up against the Rockets because of the Rockets sort of playing the way they're playing now. I mean, they're playing small. They're not playing any bigs, essentially. I mean,
they play like the Timberwolves.
Yeah, yeah. So it was kind of interesting to watch these two teams go. I mean, in the first couple of minutes of the game were just bonkers, just bananas. I mean, and you know, we've kind of talked about how this playing style can be so volatile at times, and at times it can look so chaotic. And in a way, that was the first quarter especially was kind of like that, where it was just kind of chaotic. But I kind of really enjoyed it for some reason, like, just because the entire game wasn't like that, but certainly the first few minutes of the game were like that. And it was kind of like just a sort of a quick,
I think it was the best version of themselves.
Yeah.
And I even actually, I mean, the defense became a big problem later in the game. We can get to that. But when you know you're giving up so much defensively, just physically, chaos kind of helps. And you just saw them, I thought, like, effectively just kind of scrambling around, trying to keep as many bodies as they could in the way of Harden and Westbrook drives. And sometimes, you know, Okogie spins around and he's facing the other direction, or Naz Reid's like, oh, shoot, I've been in the lane for 2.5 seconds. I got to get out. And sometimes it would look weird, and then it's just like straight line drive, easy layup for Harden.
Yeah.
But there was a lot, I thought, in the first half of chemistry and chaos. And I think, like, even if this team's good next year, that's kind of what the defense is going to look like. They're not going to have, like, they're not going to be like the Utah Jazz, where they're, like, pragmatic and big. They're just going to kind of mess with you.
Yeah.
That's what Houston is doing. This now, since they made the trades to go way smaller, is we're going to outscore you, and we're going to make your offense uncomfortable because we're
disruptive.
So different. Yes. And I think what happened was Houston sort of settled into, like, they got the, okay, we know what this is.
Yep.
Like, and basically they just attacked D'Angelo Russell, and they said, Let's get Harden on a switch. Let's get Westbrook on a switch.
I saw your tweet about that, yeah.
And then it was just Russell's defending Daniel House, and every time Harden or Westbrook wave, come on, House, come set a screen for me, we'll switch it. And then it's, I mean, nobody can really do anything against James Harden, but Russell is smaller and weaker physically, you know, than James Harden. So it's an easy buck. And if you don't have that backline help, if Naz Reid is trying to get out of the lane, or if so-and-so is facing the other direction, it looked really bad at times. Like, really easy buckets for those guys. And I think Houston sort of got in a rhythm of, like, oh, this is what we got to do. And we'll be able to beat them. So you ask yourself, like, is that book going to just kind of be out on this team? And again, this doesn't just matter for the next 18 games. You got to ask yourself for next season, okay, when, you know, at the beginning of the year, the Wolves have all these playoff aspirations, and I'm sure they'll play Houston at the beginning of the year. Like, how are you gonna defend it if they're forcing switches? With D'Angelo Russell will still be D'Angelo Russell, and James Harden will still be James Harden.
Right.
Like, what are you gonna do? It is the concern, right, with this team,
yep,
that they're never gonna be able to competently defend given their personnel. It's really hard to paint the picture for how it gets a lot better.
Can D'Angelo Russell, and I think Ryan was asked this last night after the game, I mean, is it reasonable to think that he can improve defensively?
I thought it was interesting that when Chris Hine was asking Russell about that after the game, is Russell admitted he has a tendency to get nonchalant and kind of relax, and that, you know, these games that are fairly irrelevant, that he's more likely to get, you know, lethargic in those sort of settings.
Yeah.
So you could spin that two sort of ways. Is this Andrew Wiggins all over again? Or you could say, when they have more to play for next year, when Karl-Anthony Towns is back and they're trying to make the playoffs, that Russell will be more engaged and just trying harder defensively. And then it just comes down to, well, if we're just highlighting the good things, are we being fair? We're saying, well, when he's good and the team is winning, they're doing X, Y, and Z, and it's all good. So if they're winning more games and he's going to be trying harder, then, you know, the contrarian goes, whoa, we're just going to give him a pass for the times when they fall down by 10 points and he stops trying? Like, no, that's not fair either. At the end of the day, it's on the coaches to say, no, you have a job all 48 minutes of the game to try.
It's not okay to get lax.
That's true. And I mean, just naturally, that's unrealistic. Most players don't, you know, don't put forth that effort consistently through the entirety of the game. But if you're looking at the team optimistically next year, you say they're engaged. They believe, Towns and Russell, that is, believe that they can do something special together. You know, then I do think you will get a better version of D'Angelo Russell on both sides of the floor, because he just, to me, has that personality archetype where it's like, as Wiggins did, the energy and the effort will wax and wane. And I don't think I'm making that up. Look at Chris Hines' quotes in the story, you know, from last night. Like, he said that. So a lot of that's coaching. And And you know, that's a challenge for Ryan to, when your best players are not putting forth the effort, it you can't just say, oh, Jake Layman, you're the ninth man, you're not putting forth effort, like, sit down on the bench, we're going to bring in somebody else.
Right.
Like, D'Lo's going to play. Wiggins always played.
Yep.
Because he's one of the best players on the team, one of the most talented players on the team. So it's a challenge, and it will continue to be a challenge, and it will be egregious defensively because D'Angelo Russell is not surrounded by big or strong defenders
right.
that can, you know, cover for his mistakes.
It's funny to think this, but it almost feels like they need a Robert Covington on the team.
he would help.
Yeah, he would help a ton. Obviously, you know, the players that are on the team now that wouldn't be here if not for Robert Covington being traded, obviously. But
we should say, too, that, like, my opinion on Robert Covington, and I think this is informed by the results, is that Robert Covington is and was a very good individual defender on this team. We saw it. I mean, he's special in passing lanes. He's special at ripping dribbles away from players. But Robert Covington did not synergize well with Karl-Anthony Towns. Period. He synergized well with Gorgui Dieng.
Yeah.
Because he knew what he was going to get on the back line from G. Like, the Wolves' defensive rating right now in this since the deadline is 117.8, which is awful.
Yep.
Like, awful. Worst in the league. The Wolves' defensive rating with Karl-Anthony Towns and Robert Covington on the floor together in 800 minutes before the deadline, when they were trying, was 117. The same. You know? So and now maybe that's all on Cat. Maybe that's all on Cat. And he's just, doesn't matter who the guy you put next to him is. And I think that's what some people think.
But how much of an impact was Rocco actually having on?
How good of a fit was that?
Right.
And
yeah.
if you're Gerson Rosas or Ryan Saunders, and you're thinking about shaping a roster going forward, well, Cat is on it. You know, he's the guy. So you have to say, well, Covington didn't work as the pairing for him in the front court, even defensively.
Yeah.
So we go, we need to find a different type. We need to find a different type of four to put next to him. Because it didn't work. And that's the beguiling question, you know, for this team is, you know, what is the answer for that? And obviously you and I have talked about this, I've written a bunch about it, is, you know, what would it look like to put another big next to Cat?
Mm-hmm.
Well, throw that out the window. That ain't happening.
Right.
That is clear.
Yep.
That's clear. So you start thinking about, now, what is the stretch four type big that can play fast offensively, because that is a mandate, and can shoot threes, that is a mandate. What like defensive capabilities do they have to have? That's the guy they need. And that's a hard question to answer.
It's also a hard player to find.
It really is. And it's, you know, it's what I look at when I'm watching other teams in the league. And, you know, I've watched played Orlando a lot these past couple of weeks. And, you know, I'm watching Aaron Gordon next to Nikola Vucevic, Vucevic is not a strong individual defender, but they've defended like a top 10. They're a top 10 defense this year. Is that because Aaron Gordon is a very good four next to Vucevic? Maybe. That's probably part of it. Mm-hmm. Same thing you can say about Paul Millsap in Denver next to Jokic. Like, you got to think about those type of guys, and it requires, well, we can't just copy and paste Aaron Gordon onto this team. Even if you trade for, I mean, it wouldn't, you don't know it would work. But those are kind of the questions you got to start asking: is what is, you know, who are those players who have the track records of being next to a center who has historically struggled, you know, defensively, and you know those are two guys I'm looking at. But as you said, there's not many of them.
Right.
Those guys are at a premium, so. That's where you put your faith in Rosas and company to find that guy, whether it's through the draft, whether it's through a trade, free agency, whatever it may be. But it's an absolute need for this team.
Yeah, and when you think about drafting players, I mean, it's imperative, and I've been banging on this drum for years, is that development is such a huge part of building a contending team. I mean, you can't just rely on getting lottery picks and getting top three or four picks all the time. I mean, the Wolves have, for 30 years, the Wolves have had plenty of those.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, a big part of it is getting the right guy and developing that guy as well. I mean, I keep going back to the way the Nuggets have sort of developed that team. I mean, yeah. and you know, Millsap has been a great fit there, but like,
and then went and got Jeremy Grant too.
Yeah,
like that's another one. So how do you view this draft? Because
I don't know. It's hard to tell.
Well, I mean, not even of the players, because I don't think, if you and I are being honest, we're deeply informed as to the quality of the players. But you can kind of think about it. Well, I think in three ways. You're looking at the Wolves are probably going to have a top five pick, right?
Mm-hmm.
So do you draft for positional need? That archetype of player that we're talking about, are you prioritizing finding that guy, or are you prioritizing best player available? Because you know what? Yeah, this team has defensive issues, and there's some question marks at the four next to Cat. But you know what the other question is? They don't have enough talent. Yeah. They don't have enough talent to compete. So what is the best way possible to rocket your team's talent level for years to come? It's landing a guy in the lottery on a rookie scale contract that you're going to have on the cheap for years.
Yeah.
That's an argument too. And then the third one is, do you trade it?
Right.
Because other teams will see that those value one and value two, and maybe they'll be willing to, you know, to part ways with somebody else on a more expensive contract that doesn't totally fit what they're doing, you know, for that pick. I mean, those are kind of the three different avenues you mm-hmm. can look at this, you know, this draft through. And I don't think it's not obvious which one of three. I think you can make a strong argument for any of those three.
I feel like if you're drafting in the top five, which, like you said, it looks like the Wolves are going to be, I think at that point you just take best player available. If the route is going to be, we're going to use that pick, we're going to take a guy, and we're going to try and integrate him into our future plans. I think if you're trying to make a move, if you're trying to trade that pick and package that pick with other assets, then I think you're probably looking at trying to get someone specific, right? Yeah. Like that's you're making a trade for a specific player that you feel like fits a need that your team has, and if that is sort of a power forward, a four man that fits next door,
whatever they deem it may be,
whatever it may be, that's the route to go. But I think if your idea is to keep that pick, I think you just have to take best player available, because I don't know who's going to come out of this draft and be a star. Maybe nobody does. Maybe five or six guys come out of this draft and end up being mm-hmm. star, all-star caliber players. If you're going to keep that pick, I think you just got to take who you view the best player available is and just run with it and develop the hell out of that guy and hope he turns into a star.
Or just develop him, hope he turns into a star, and then trade him.
Sure. Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's the nature of this front office is going to be that the roster is always going to be in flux.
Yeah.
They need to improve overall assets so as to improve the overall quality of the team. It's not, we need player X to fill role Y. You know, it's get as much talent in as you can on as good of contracts as possible, and then be able to, every deadline. I mean, it's not going to look as crazy as this February was, but I'm anticipating that every summer the Wolves are going to be all over your Woj notifications, and every draft night and every trade deadline. Like, that's the nature. The league has incentivized that. That is how this game works.
Yeah.
So I think they need to do that. I just don't know where this front office views they're at in their process. They're clearly open to the notion that they're in the midst of a process, but it would be kind of weird to win 22 games this year, let's say, and then to be like, we got the third overall pick, we're ready to move that to go all in to compete next year. Like,
right.
That just seems kind of, I would get it. I actually think that's what's going to happen,
mm-hmm.
but there's like some holes in that logic, right? Of like, we're sure we're ready for that.
Right.
So I find it fascinating because it's hard to rule out any of those angles.
Yeah, I mean it's going to be crazy. How do you think, you mentioned Jake Layman earlier? How do you think Jake's playing since he's been back?
I think he's getting more confident in his foot.
Yeah.
Again, talking in the locker room after the last game, and he had the big dunk on Favors, right? And it wasn't just that. He had hit a whole, that whole first half against the Pelicans, he was really good.
Yeah.
And it was the first time he looked really good.
That dunk was awesome.
It was awesome. and Britt and I were talking to him, you know, just kind of about like, oh, do you feel like you've kind of got your rhythm back in this game? He's like, I felt like I had my rhythm for like a week or two. It wasn't showing up in like his production, but you know, I think it's just you miss 40 games. There's going to be an adjustment process to get your body feeling right. I think that took him a couple weeks.
Get your legs under
and then to kind of, even once your body's feeling right, you're not just going to go out and produce. You got to kind of get comfortable in your role and how you fit. And I think, you know, I think we're seeing that with Lehman, and he's going to be an important piece next year. So far he's kind of been towards the end of the rotation since coming back, but I would anticipate he's like sixth, seventh man next year. He's one of the few guys on the team I can say I feel definitely fits with Karl Anthony Towns. I just like his awareness defensively. I think that's really helpful.
I like him a lot.
And then the pace he can play with offensively seems to synergize well with both Cat, and I think we're seeing that with D'Lo too. It's been cool to see a couple of ball screen actions that include Jake as the screener. You know, to kind of deviate from the traditional, like, center comes and sets a screen. Jake has the ability athletically, you know, to play in the seams and to roll off that and to hit a cut. And Russell, I think Russell is like keenly aware of that's something that Lehman can do. So I would anticipate that I'm buying Jake Lehman stock, I guess, that he's going to be better for the close of the season. And then really, I mean, he's a role player. So he needs good players around him, and if they have that next year, like I could see him fitting into this. And he's under contract for two more years after this. Like he's one of the guys that you can closest to say is locked up here. You know, so he's one of the things very much worth watching for the rest of the year.
How do you think Wancho's playing too? He had a pretty solid game last night and came out, flamed a couple of threes early, and hey, man, he's interesting.
He's shooting 42% from three since he came here. I mean, I don't know. They're not like, it's not a small sample size, not anything of that. I mean, to me, you know, whatever, you have a bunch, you do radio, you have Twitter, you have all these different conversations, and like, the shine seems to be like kind of falling off of Hernan Gomez because everyone's like, oh, the defense stinks, like the team's defense stinks, and they see him get overpowered and stuff. Like, that's true, that happens too, but I never viewed Wancho as the starting four. I didn't think they traded for Hernan Gomez to be that guy we were talking about next to Cat. He was an off the bench piece.
Yep.
He was going to be a big that you would bring in, you know, once Cat and whoever the other guy is.
If Jake is the sixth guy, is he like the seventh or eighth guy?
I would think so. That's what I mean. I think if they sign him, that's the role. That's his optimal role, I think, in my opinion. So, a big question to me was, you know, I just want to watch him shoot because his numbers were so volatile shooting because his role was so volatile. And I was like, okay, is this a product of him just not being a very good shooter or just maybe lacking comfort? And from the get-go, I mean, he's been a decisive shooter. And I don't like love his mechanics, but, you know, if he can get to that and he can rip it fast, like, I don't think it's like crazy that he shot this number. I'm not banking on him being a 40% shooter next year. I think you take him out of a starting role, he'll fall back into some of that maybe, you know, lacking the flow and the comfort of all of it.
It's more like 36-37%.
Yeah, but man, would I take a 36-37% shooter? I mean, team shot 32% before the deadline. Like, that is a massive upgrade.
Yeah.
It's a fair question to say, what does he normalize at? But what more could you ask for than shooting over 40% on high volume, seeming like offensively at least, he also synergizes well with D'Angelo Russell. Like, I've seen a lot of good pick and pop action with those two.
Yeah.
Because Russell attracts a lot of, you know, attention off the dribble, off of a screen. So you gotta like that. His finishing around the rim, I think, is concerning, but that's a symptom of the same problem he has defensively. He's not very big and strong. Which, if we've learned anything, that's not that important to this team, right? Like you know, they're like, yeah, you know, I had an interview with Brian Gates when I was writing a story on Keelan Martin a couple weeks ago, and Keelan Martin, right, definitively a role player, and Brian Gates said, he goes, with role, not everybody has to be an A student. He goes, and I mean that in a good way. Like,
right.
Not everybody has to be an A student. We don't need to say with every one of these guys, particularly if they're only making a couple million bucks, oh, this is what they're bad at. Like, yeah, you're going to be bad at stuff when you're not a star.
Right.
There's stars in the league. There's guys on a max contract. There's two guys on a max contract on this team who are one-way players.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, and you would say they're, well, Cat for sure has worked that contract. Like, so, I don't know. Like, with Wancho, just because we're not getting the full package of two-way play from him, to me, you know, I'm not discouraged at all by what I've seen.
There's still ways he can help this team.
For sure. For sure. He very much fits, you know, what they want to do offensively. And he's effort has not been an issue for him defensively. He isn't having lapses there. If anything, he tries too hard and fouls. But he's trying too hard because he's physically, you know, at a disadvantage against Zion Williamson or whoever, like Aaron Gordon, who are the other teams they play. I mean, every night it's pretty much the team's got the opposing four is bigger and stronger than him. It's not his fault that they're saying, hey, you got to go play the four. Like, he's more got the build of what we consider to be a traditional three. Given that they're playing small ball, like, you just shift up. So, I don't know. I mean, with him, I think you got to take the positives with the negatives and be cool with it.
How do you think the small ball thing is going to play out for the Rockets in the postseason? How far can they go? I mean, I don't think they're going to go to the finals or anything, but how far can they go playing this style?
Yeah, you know, they weren't going anywhere playing the other style.
Right.
Like, I don't know, man. If you watched a lot of Houston at the beginning of the year, they got wins, but it was like because Harden was going off.
Yeah.
And there was just like, to me, when I was watching them, like, this team has a ceiling. You put them in a playoff series, they got no shot against the upper tier teams, the LA teams, let's say.
Yeah.
But now, I'm not picking them in a series against those guys, but you're showing them something so different. You are so leaning into what your team's efficiencies are and sacrificing something on the defensive end. It gives you a shot to get hot in a 7-game series and say, you know, we shot 55 threes in four of these games and we made 45% of them. And those, like, that's gonna, team's going to be really hard to beat.
Yeah.
In four games, they shoot a ton of threes and make 40-plus percent of them.
And if James and Russ are both, like, on it, if they're both on their game, like, they could be very, very, very disruptive.
Russell's the center. It's weird because it comes... I mean, he functions... Like, what do we traditionally think of a center in basketball to be? You know, physical and imposing their will at the rim.
Yeah.
Like, that's what Russell Westbrook does. He needs a run-up to get there, but he does. It's just repurposed in a different sort of way. So, I mean, more than anything, like, I'm intrigued by it.
Yeah.
You know, to watch, there's, I think with any of these teams, there's like an element of nostalgia where you're like, this isn't the basketball I'm used to watching. And some people hate it. I don't hate it. I maybe have minutes of nostalgia. I'm like, is this as good as it used to be? Like, I don't know. But again, it comes back to, if you're Houston, you go, well, before we made these trades and we were playing traditionally, we had a 1% chance of winning the championship. Now we have a 3% chance of winning the championship. Like, so yeah,
it's a better shot.
Yeah, like, yeah. I get that. Like, I don't know.
But it's different. I mean, it's nobody else in the league. I mean, the Wolves are kind of, because Cat's not playing, are kind of playing this.
Yeah, the Wolves
way,
are like the G League Rockets.
Right. Other than that, like, nobody else in the league is playing like this. Mm-hmm. And because they're a good team and because they've been winning, they're going to go to the playoffs. They are that one team that you're going to be interested in sort of watching because they're going to be so much more different than the other 15 teams that are going to be in the postseason.
Absolutely. I mean, it's definitely a worthy watch. And what is the playoffs about? It's about every team leans way more on what they're best at. Like, and the Rockets will have some dynamic best options, you know, to go through. And what I'm seeing with them now, and we kind of saw that in the first half of the Wolves game, is they're just a little too sloppy.
Yeah.
They played Orlando before the Wolves, and turnovers were a massive problem. And then that, like, kind of caught them sagging a little bit. and now they're back on their heels, and Orlando's huge with, you know, Vucevic and Gordon, and even, like, Fultz is a big guard, and they just kind of, like, pounded them once they're on the heels. Like, the Rockets, for this to work for the Rockets, like, they need to stay up. They need to stay confident in what that what they're doing is best, because as soon as they, like, deflate it all, you're just going to get steamrolled.
Yeah.
So, really, like, as much as it is for any team, like, in the playoffs, these last 15, 20 games for them, I think is really about getting momentum and feeling confident. And like, yeah, we rolled through these 15 games. Like, bring on the Nuggets, whoever. Like, let's go. We're confident in that, because yeah, when they lose confidence, when they get messy, it's bad. And then all of a sudden you're down by 30 to the Orlando Magic. Like, that happens. So they're volatile. That's the way to put it. Like, it has a high upside and a low downside.
Yeah.
Which, you know, that's
what we've been talking about with the Wolves.
It's the most math thing ever, right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. So, of course, Daryl Morey's doing that. Like, I don't know. I get it. It's intriguing.
Yeah. That is the voice of Dane Moore that you heard. Follow him on Twitter at Dane Moore NBA. You can see his scribes at Zone Coverage as well. And you can follow me at MannyHill84 on Twitter. And I'm just tweeting about random stuff here and there and sports stuff mostly. But thanks for listening to Raised by Wolves. You can find this podcast on Apple, Spotify, ScoreNorth.com, ScoreNorth mobile app, or wherever you find your podcasts. For Dane Moore, I'm Manny Hill. Thanks for listening to Raised by Wolves, and we'll talk to you next week.